Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are now 147 days away from the Summer Games in Paris. I'm Ryan Burrow. Let's get to some of the news with about 5 months to go before the Games. In a bit of a surprise, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team fell to Mexico 2-0 in its 2024 CONCACAF W Gold Cup Group Stage Final. It's just Mexico's second ever win against the U.S. The U.S. will play Colombia in quarterfinal action beginning Sunday. Meanwhile, the German Women's Soccer Team solidified its Olympic berth with a win over the Netherlands at the UEFA Nationals League's third-place playoff. In gymnastics, on the men's side, Yomel Dauer had a come-from-behind victory at the Senior Men's Winter Cup all-around title to close out the competition in Louisville. Shane Wiskus and Riley Luz finished second and third. On the women's side, Kayla DiCello, Sky Blakely, and Hesley Rivera finished 1-2-3. Suni Lee had a rough weekend after returning to the mat from a kidney issue. She finished 30th. She was not selected among the Americans headed to the Baku World Cup next month. And Gabby Douglas wasn't able to compete in her attempted return to the sport after coming down with COVID just before the meet. U.S. skateboarders are competing for spots this weekend on the Olympic team at the World Skate Tour in Dubai. The skateboarders are competing for valuable points as they fight for a roster spot. Three-time Grand Slam British tennis champion Andy Murray is hoping to compete in the Olympics this summer, but admits Paris may be his last major event before he hangs up his racket. French President Emmanuel Macron officially inaugurated what will be the Athletes' Village in Paris this summer. The roughly 40 low-rise tower blocks will house about 14,000 athletes come July. The village, however, will not have air conditioning despite record-breaking heat waves in Paris over the last couple summers. The goal is to reduce the game's carbon footprints, though many athletes are expressing some concerns about that. President Macron also proclaimed this week that he plans to swim in the River Seine ahead of the games to prove it is safe. There have been concerns about health risks involved with events taking place on and inside the river. There were concerns that a bag stolen from a train in Paris contained all of the Olympic security plans for the upcoming games. But in a statement Wednesday, Paris City Hall said initial checks have allowed us to establish that the staff member was not in possession of any information relating to organization and deployment of police during the Olympics and Paralympics. In this week's Quest for Gold, we chat with two-time Olympian Anita Alvarez, who has helped lead Team USA artistic swimming into a unique place as potential medal contenders headed into Paris 2024.
Synchronized swimming versus artistic swimming. Is there a difference?
No difference. They changed the name back in 2017, I believe it was. Kind of just as the sport's been growing and evolving, they decided that there needed to be a name shift. And, you know, synchronized swimming was tied back to its roots and in the Esther Williams days of when it first originated and kind of the show style of swimming. And now it's become such an intense high level sport. And I think there are some things that have changed that not every part of the sport needs to be synchronized. So people were getting confused because you get more creative with the artistic side of it too. So they ended up changing it to artistic swimming, which actually it lines up with gymnastics as well. Like regular Simone Biles gymnastics is actually called artistic gymnastics, which a lot of people don't know.
How did you get into the sport?
So I started the sport, really been in the sport since I was in my mom's belly. She grew up doing the sport and was a coach my whole life growing up. So I was kind of born and started following her around on the pool deck and, you know, trying synchro on my own in the bathtub, in the backyard pool, and started into like some programs when I was five years old, and then joined the official year round travel team when I was nine. And that was back in Tonawanda, Buffalo, New York area, where I grew up. And then from there kind of started elevating up in the sport, competing, at the national level and qualified for some national team trials, which is 2013 when I made my first team, which is when I moved out west to California to begin my Olympic dream journey, I guess you can say.
How do you advance in the sport? Is it predominantly park district, club level? Like, how do you find these teams and kind of grow?
Yeah, so it's mostly club level. You'll find very few programs that are in like high schools, you know, high school synchronized swimming teams. So it's mostly just club programs. You know, I grew up with my mom there, so I had that easy access to finding the sport. And then from there, you compete in different events. So I grew up swimming in the team events, but I also swam solo and, duets and trios we used to have. And when you compete, there's an event where you compete called Figures when you're younger. And it's basically like elements performed one by one in front of a judge. So that's kind of where you start getting your rank, you know, in your state, in your East Coast, in nationally. And that's when people start scouting you out for like national teams, for example. So they see kind of that talent from your individual level. And then you start qualifying for all-star camps or national team trials and things like that.
I would guess that there probably aren't a ton of artistic swimmers that come out of Buffalo. Am I wrong?
Not a ton, but there are a couple. We have two like bigger club teams that have been around for a while now. So more and more have been coming, you know, since when I was younger, there were a couple swimmers who were making national teams, and that was kind of like, oh, those people are from, you know, my area. And so, and then I became one of those people, and then now there are some people younger than me who are very, very talented and starting to make national teams. So not huge, but it's definitely growing. It was
Is this similar to beach volleyball and rowing, where you eventually end up in California? Is that kind of the process? Yeah. That's where the coaches are. That's where the training centers are. You go out to the West Coast.
Yeah. So once you make the national team, you have to move wherever the training center is to train full time, because it's a team sport. So we have to be together. And since I've made it, it's been out in California. So I was up in Northern California for about 10 years, and now we're down in LA. So pretty much wherever you're from, once you make the national team, you have to figure out your life and relocate to California. Yeah.
There's no college level to this. There's no NCAA artistic swimming sport, I guess, right?
There is college, actually. There's collegiate synchro. It's been around for a long time. And actually, I skipped over that route. I kind of moved out here when I was in high school still. So I, you know, trained for my first, I graduated high school and then competed in Rio that following year. And then kind of skipped over the collegiate synchro route to just continue pursuing the national team route. But there are several schools around the country that have collegiate programs.
Historically, how has the U.S. done in artistic or synchronized swimming over the years?
So the first time the games were, or the team event were at the Olympic Games, 1996, USA won gold. So that is like the big, you know, golden team that we all know and have looked up to. And I've been lucky enough to be coached by some of them. And then after that, we haven't had a medal since 2004, I believe. And then 2008 was actually the last time that the U.S. had a team competing in the Olympics. So I competed in the duet in 2016 and in 2020, but the team hasn't been there since 2008. So we just got back from World Championships a couple weeks ago, where we qualified the U.S. spot for the first time since 2008, which is super exciting. And yeah, I was born in 1996, which is, you know, when it was gold. 2008 was the first games that, like, I really remember watching the Olympics at home and being like, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. And then now being able to be the first team that's back since then is super special. So
yeah, and you guys are pretty well acclaimed right now. Did I see second best in the world as far as rankings go?
Yeah, so at this last World Championships, so the way they decide or you get your rank is there are three events. There's the technical event, the free, and then the acrobatic routine, and they add up the three scores. So at Worlds, we got a bronze medal in the acrobatic routine and bronze medal in the free team. And we ended fourth in the technical routine, but with our total scores, that had us in second place. So it didn't mean anything for us at Worlds because there was no medal for the all around, but it's really putting us in a really good position going into the games this summer. So that was huge for us. Cause I mean, our goal is always just like, let's get a team back to the Olympics. Let's qualify, you know? And then now we're getting medals and placing so well. So it's huge.
And very similar to volleyball and basketball, you guys have the team, the guaranteed spot, but the roster has not been determined yet.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have a squad of 12, a team of 12, and they have to select, I believe we can only take eight So they'll select eight, and the ninth is the alternate who will travel to the games. And then same with the duet event. We have a squad right now, and they have to select the final two still.
Now, the two have to come from those eight.
Yeah, yeah. So there's eight people who swim in the team, and two of those eight will have to swim the duet. It's not like separate events.
Well, that sets up an interesting scenario, because then are the duets kind of already practiced? I mean, you don't want to just like, you don't want to just get it thrown at you, right? I mean, are there little duet practices going on, or is whoever is going to be the duet, or is the routine already set and it's just a matter of who's going to do it?
Yeah, so we kind of put duet on hold after Pan American Games because we had already qualified our U.S. spot. And now it was like, let's just focus on the team. So coming back right now from Worlds, we're going to start kind of revamping the choreography a little bit to make it better for the Olympics. And that will be with the three or four of us in the squad and kind of training all of us to fight for those two spots. So it's going to be extra time. Like, you know, we have all the hours of team training, and then usually the duet will start in the morning a little bit earlier in the water and stay in the water after practice. So it's a lot of extra work and hours that go into it. But yeah.
Do the athletes have much say as far as what the programs are going to look like, or, you know, do the coaches kind of say, this is how it's going to be?
For like the choreographies, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's cool with our team. It's a big collaboration between all of us athletes and coaches. And you don't get that every country you ask is different, but for us, it's very, yeah, it's a huge collaboration, and our coaches usually come in with ideas. But then again, they're not in the water with us. So they'll throw some ideas at us, and we're in there trying it, and we're like, oh yeah, this is a little impossible. So we help to kind of find a new option or see what works. And everyone spits in ideas, which is pretty cool, because then in the end, you're performing your masterpiece that you've all created together. So it makes it even more like yours when you're competing it, which is a little bit different if you hire a choreographer to come in, choreograph your routine, and then they leave and you just swim this product that they made for you. So that's unique within our team. Maybe some other teams do it as well, but I know a bunch don't.
Men on the team?
It's new. So this is the first Olympics where it's a mixed team event. So you can have up to two males in your team routine. So in the eight.
But it's not separate. If you've got men, it's not separate than women.
It's still the same event. It's just mixed team event. So you have the option to put up to two males. Maybe some countries will have two, maybe some will have one, and some might just have all eight females. So it's open.
And we and the U.S. has one or two on the 12.
We have one in the squad of 12. Bill May is his name. He's kind of legend in our sport for men in synchro. He's kind of the pioneer there. And once that announcement was made that men are allowed, he kind of came back out of retirement and worked to be here. And he's fought for the equality in our sport for his whole life and has dreamed of the Olympics. So now that it's kind of an option, he decided to come back and give it a go.
If it's been a while since the U.S. team has qualified, kind of who are the people that you're always chasing?
Yeah, so I mean, since 96, U.S. won gold, and then every Olympics after that, since 2000, Russia has won gold. So yes. This year they won't be there. In Tokyo, they competed under, you know, ROC because of the doping violation. Now they're not allowed because of the war and everything. But as of lately, you know, China's always been silver behind Russia, kind of trying to step up and beat them. And lately, that's who we've been competing with at World Championships, which is crazy to say because we were so far from them before. And I would never think that I would be saying that China is, you know, our close rival who we want to kind of catch up to. But the past World Champs have been China, Japan, Spain are really up there. But there is a new scoring system in our sport that just started this year. So it does leave a lot of room for fluctuation in the results, which is new for us. So it's really like anything can happen in any competition. You know, Ukraine was usually up in the ranks, and then they just didn't do great at world champs and they didn't qualify at all for the game. So anything can kind of happen, which is exciting, but it's also a lot more pressure.
Yeah. And you know, we don't need to get political or anything, but, you know, with Russia not being in it, and I talked to some of the gymnasts, it does really change the dynamic quite a bit. Does that kind of hurt the sport that they're not there?
I don't think so. I think that especially with the new scoring change, so much is happening and changing in our sport right now anyway, that there's so much happening to help our sport grow right now, and all the countries are kind of participating in that. And I mean, of course, you know, we love to have everyone there always, but like, I don't think it necessarily hurts it. I think it's, you know, there's a lot happening in our sport that's kind of shifting the way outside of that. So,
all right, 2016 and 2020, which was actually 2021, very mm-hmm. different games, right? Like, you probably had completely different experiences. But totally. Walk me through both of them. Like, kind of, obviously, the Tokyo was probably not the most Olympic of experiences, but walk me through it.
Yeah, so Rio 2016 was my first games. I was 19 years old, and everything to me, like, you know, everything was just like amazing. Like, I walked into this pool that it was not a new pool. It wasn't a new venue. I had actually competed there, I think, 3 times before. But I remember walking in, and it's just when it was the Olympics, and it was just so different. Like, my eyes were just like popping out of my head, and every little thing was so cool. And like, I was just taking it all in and living in that experience, because I had been dreaming of this moment, right? And then you're finally there. And I think you don't really realize how big of a spectacle it all is until you're there. And I always just say that, like, the energy of the city and everything is just huge. Like, you can just, it just feels different. And I don't even know how to describe it all in words. But so Rio was great. We had great performances as well. So I enjoyed myself. And we competed really well. We moved up in the ranks, which, you know, we ended 9th. And at that time I was like, oh my gosh, we're 9th, you know, and now we're up fighting, like trying to get medals. So it's a completely different space now. But back then that was huge for us. And then going into 2020, totally different. You know, obviously with COVID and everything was pushed back a year. Our team was fighting to qualify and just came short, like just came short of that qualification spot. So that was really, really heartbreaking. And then having to go with the duet, getting to go with the duet, but having to leave the team behind was really hard. So the whole experience was just different. And then obviously you're there and like, you can't go anywhere outside of the village in the pool. You're eating in the dining hall in between like plexiglass. You're wearing masks everywhere. So it was a very different experience. No audience in the stands. I couldn't have my family there or anyone. It was like, you're walking out on the pool deck and you have cameras, you have judges, you have this huge pool, but nobody in the seats. It was bizarre.
Do you feel that right now in 2024, you're probably a little bit more mentally mature than you were in 2016? Are there different things you're doing now that you didn't do back then? Maybe things you've picked up along the way?
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm a completely different person mentally going into this games. And I think there's a lot behind it with between the experience, you know, the different successes and failures that I've had in between and had to grow from and learn from. And just, you know, maturing as a person and experiencing more of life too. Like, you go into the first Olympics and I'm just, you know, happy to be there basically. And now I'm going in, obviously, like, happy to be there. And I said, like I've said before, that this is going to feel like my first Olympics again, going with the team, not just with the duet. It's going to be a new experience. And I'm super excited for that. But yeah, definitely in a different mental space. I'm trying to think of like specific things that are different, but I think it's just so much. And I'm also in a different position in the team as an athlete, as a leader, as you know, the one in the team who has the previous Olympic experience. I feel I have a different role to play versus in 2016 when I was the younger of the two. My duet partner was 7 years older than me, and she was kind of the veteran. She competed in London, and I was kind of like the little sister following along. And now I feel like I've kind of, you know, playing a different leadership role within the team.
What kind of workout routine do you have? Do you guys focus more on endurance, weightlifting, maybe all of the above?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. Our sport requires so many different skills and abilities. You know, you have to have the strength and the power. You have to have the speed and agility. You have to have the endurance, but also the short speed, like fast fiber muscles. You have to have the strength and power, but you also have to be flexible and graceful. And, you know, there's so many things combined into one. That we do strength and conditioning work. We do a lot of breath work. We do regular like speed swimming training for endurance and for conditioning in the pool. We do, you know, our training hours are so long. So we do like endurance type training every day, but in the end, our routines are about two and a half to 4 minutes long. So it's not an endurance event. We're not running a marathon when we compete. So it's a really like different, unique sport, I guess, in the way that we have to train. And I think it's also not perfected yet. It is still a young sport in the sense of, you know, we don't have a lot of research. We don't have any books out there on our sport. We don't have a ton of research. So it's really a lot of trial and error at the same time of us trying to figure out what the best training plan is for our sport.
You don't just go out there and just do the routine and then do it again and do it again and do it again. I mean, maybe you do on some days, but are there certain goals you're trying to hit? Are there certain, you know, steps you're trying to make to advance along the way? Or is it just a matter of
possibility? It's a little bit of both. It depends on what point of the season we're in, but there's a lot of like tiny, minute detail perfecting. So it's not always just repeating the routine over and over. Sometimes we'll spend hours or days on like one 10-second part of the routine. And it's because we're perfecting all those little details. You know, is your hand at 45 degrees or 62 degrees, you know, like so detailed and tiny. And little things like our face, are we smiling, but our eyebrows are, you know, angry, like matching those little things too. And so we have to spend all that time to really perfect, because we're trying to match 8 people in the water at the same time in that split like half second moment. So we do a lot of video review. We're videoing on big iPads at the poolside every day, and we swim to the wall and look at the video. We slow-mo, we'll pause, screenshot, go back, try and fix. We have underwater cameras, so we'll set up underwater cameras to help technique work if something's happening, like, okay, let's figure out what's going on. Oh, look, it's because you're right arm is above your head at this point. So, you know, so all those little details. So there is the endurance training of swimming the routines over and over, putting weight belts on, doing like Tabata workouts. But then there are also like those tiny detail moments of trying to perfect all those little things.
You're a professional artistic swimmer. How do you make money? Are you sponsored? Do you have a job? How does that work?
Yeah. So, most of it, we do get some funding from the U.S. Olympic Committee. So we get some athlete monthly stipends to kind of go with our training, our travel, our all that stuff. And then a lot of it now is prize money. So we'll go to competitions and, you know, the better you do, the better off you'll be as far as money goes. So that's huge. But of course, nothing's guaranteed there. So I do work. We also live and train in L.A., one of the most expensive cities. So I coach. I do some coaching, private lessons. I work with a club team. You pick up kind of side gigs here and there. And also within our sport, because it is an entertainment kind of performance sport, there are a lot of cool opportunities that we get for, you know, events, to get to perform at an event or to...
They pay you to come in and perform, essentially.
Yeah. Or this artist is, you know, doing a music video and they want synchronized swimmers in it. So, like, we get cool opportunities like that here and there, especially being down in LA. We've gotten a lot more opportunities like that, which have been nice. And then, yes, sponsors, trying to find sponsors, which I'm not great at, and I, you know, usually will do things through like USA Artistic Swimming, but I think it's something that I personally need to be better at, is trying to advocate for myself and get some individual personal sponsors to help me with my training and all that too. So
what's the average age? I mean, where are you kind of at in your career? I know you've done this for a while, but do artistic swimmers last a long time? I know beach volleyball players go into their 40s. You get gymnasts pretty much by the time they're 19, 20, all of a sudden, you know, they've kind of aged out. What's kind of the sweet spot for artistic swimming?
It's really changing. And a lot of it depends individually, like how your body holds up. A lot of it is just overuse injuries and from doing the same movements over and over. But everyone's different, and people are staying now into their 30s, late 30s, early 40s. Some people will have a family and come back and go to another Olympics. So it really depends on you. And I've always said I'm 27 now. So I feel like I'm in kind of that perfect peak moment, like mid to late 20s. And I've always said, as long as my body's healthy, as long as I still love it, and as long as I'm able to live with the money side of things, then I don't see why I wouldn't keep going. So for me, yeah, I'm focusing on Paris right now, but you know, not ruling out LA, a home Olympics in 2028 yet.
Let's get into that. What kind of goals have you set for yourself this year? Obviously, you'd like to compete in Paris. Is there something you need to do before that? Do you tend to think about Paris as motivation, or do you find that Paris can become a little overwhelming and you just got to get through the day to day?
I like to have that goal in mind. And I think of the big picture with Paris, you know, of course, making smaller goals in between there to not drive yourself crazy. But I think for me, honestly, getting to Paris has been that big goal has been there, but I wasn't even thinking about Paris or anything after that, because I was like, let's qualify. So my brain was like going towards Pan American Games last fall, because that was our first chance to qualify. Then when we missed that one, I was like, okay, everything into World Championships in Doha, like not even thinking about anything else yet. So I think these past two weeks are the first time I'm starting to finally like process, you know, going to Paris. So for me, it's not more of a pressure. It's very exciting for a lot of different reasons, but I think I use it as fuel and motivation almost, especially on like those hard days when you're tired and you don't want to get up at 5:30 in the morning or whatever. So I find it exciting, and I have a lot of goals for, you know, going into Paris with the team, hopefully with the duet. And then outside of that, I also swim the solo routine, and that's not an Olympic event, but it's a World Championship and World Cup event. So after Paris, I think I want to put a lot of energy into my personal development and growth and see where I can go with my individual potential as well, which is
obviously
future goal.
One goal is to stay healthy over the next few months, right? So that's going to be a big part of it.
Exactly. Always. And, you know, like going into Rio, I keep telling people going into Rio, there was the whole thing with Zika, and I'm like, don't get Zika. And then before Tokyo, this big thing with COVID, and I'm like, don't get COVID. Yeah. So now I'm like, I don't know what's coming, but just stay healthy, sleep well, eat well, drink water, like just do whatever you have to do to be healthy. So
sure. You alluded to it before, we talked a little bit with Russia, with WADA. Do you guys get regularly tested?
We do, yeah. So we have USADA, U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, and we're in their system, so they know where we live, where we train, when we train, where we, you know, where we are basically all the time, and can show up at our house, at the pool.
You have any fun stories? You ever get a knock at the door? Have you gotten dinged for not being where you're supposed to be?
Yep. Yeah. I forget to update it sometimes. And I've had a few stories. There's one time actually in 2016 for our Olympic qualifier, my duet partner and I were in Brazil for the qualifier, and the people show up at our pool in California, and we're like, so, you know, you get like warnings, but if you miss so many, it equals a failed test. So it starts to get like stressful, because I think at one point I had my home address set, but it was like set for super early because I'm always up early for training. But then the one day it was like Sunday, it was our day off. So I was sleeping. So I didn't even wake up to the knock at the door. And then I got a missed test. And then, so I changed my time, my like window of being home to the evening. And then this one evening I had to go drive like somewhere far away for an MRI. And of course I'm walking into my MRI and I get a call. Oh, it's USADA. We're at your door. And I was like, I just changed it to PM. And so I was like, then that was when it was the scariest for me because I had two dings. And I was like, if I get one more, like that equals a failed test, which means you like, you know, you're out of everything for a couple of years. So it's like, it can be a little stressful, but it's also like, I need to just be better about updating my whereabouts and all that stuff. But yeah, I always have the worst luck. Like I broke my foot and I was on crutches 1 year and they came to my door. So I was like, I had to crutch over at like 6 a.m. And it's always something weird with me, I think.
I love your bio on the page. It says, she rode the elevator with Michael Phelps 2 times. did you fangirl out or did you?
That was in Rio. And okay. I'm not a big celebrity person or like fangirl. Like, I don't know. I just, I'm like, yeah, you're people, like you're cool, but whatever. But like, I got in the elevator in the athlete village in Rio. And I remember I walked in and like my friend who I knew was a diver who was right there. And I walked in and I looked up and I was like, and I looked at her like with big eyes and she was like, I know. And then I just like walked in and turned around and was like, oh my God, oh my God. And he's huge, like super tall. Sure. And then I remember I didn't say anything, but I got out and then I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe like, and I was like, I can't believe I didn't say anything. Like, I'm never going to see him again. And then the next day I'm in the elevator and all of a sudden the doors open and he walks in again. I was like, oh, no way. And this was like a big building and a lot of elevators. So it was kind of like a shock that we happened to be in the same one twice. And it was actually, he had his headphones on he was going to compete because they competed in the evening in Rio. And it was like the day when it was his last race ever, like his last race. So I was like, I can't mess with him. I can't say anything. And he was in the zone with his headphones. So I was just like, all right, I think I have like a little selfie of like where I snuck a picture of us. But yeah, that was it.
It says you stepped on Michelle Obama's foot when she hugged you on the first visit, on a visit to the White House.
So we go to the White House after the Olympic Games. You get Team USA gets invited to the White House. So I was there for a visit in 2016 and you get to meet the president, first lady. So, you know, you're like waiting in line and then you go through and we actually like got to hug them. And like they said a little something to us cause we were with our sport. So they said something about artistic swimming, whatever. But yeah, I remember I hugged her and I was stepping on her foot. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm stepping on your foot. And like, I couldn't move cause we were mid hug. And then she was like, it's okay. I was like,
put a
wow.
Nose clip on John Legend.
That one we did a segment for The Voice. It was for the Tokyo Games. Each judge got to choose an Olympic sport that they wanted to learn and do like a segment on. So John Legend chose artistic swimming, and he had just learned to swim like a couple months before that. So it was like huge that he chose our sport, and so we had a whole day where we got to teach him how to swim or how to do artistic swimming. And yeah, that was one of the things was like, he was like, all right, how do I do this? And so I got to put a nose clip on him and teach him. So that was pretty cool.
The Olympics give you an opportunity to really have a lot of fun outside of competing. That's really cool. I know everyone I talk to, and you've done it twice now. One of their favorite days, even sometimes better, more than competition, is the day you get all the swag. When you show up and you get sized and you get your bag and you get all your shirts and coats and it sounds awesome. Yeah. It sounds like an awesome experience.
We're super spoiled with Team USA. We get such great outfitting. Like we get, you know, Nike and the Ralph Lauren stuff are the two sponsors. And the day for Rio was cooler because Tokyo, we just arrived to Tokyo and they had our suitcases in our room. So it's still cool to like open all the stuff. But in Rio, we got like this whole day where you went and you go around to all the stations, all the sponsors, and pick up your goodies, basically. And I remember walking into the Nike Ralph Lauren area, and you go you go into the Nike one and they give you like your own personalized dressing room, and all your stuff is set up in there with all your sizes. And you can basically do anything you want. You can take all the stuff and go. You can try on a few things and go, or you can try on every single piece of clothing that they have there for you. And you're able to exchange sizes and do all that stuff. But yeah, that was one of the coolest days, I think, before Rio, which I think will be really exciting for our team to have this year.
You mentioned Michael Phelps. Were there any other athletes that you rubbed elbows with? The basketball players, Simone Biles, like track and field stars, anyone? Although I guess in 2021, you guys were pretty limited and probably didn't see all that many.
Yeah, 2021, I didn't see many people. Like, they flew us in a couple of days before a competition and flew us out as soon as we were done. And you didn't get to see a ton of people. 2016, I also didn't see that many people. Michael Phelps was probably the biggest one. Basketball
team, I think, stayed on. Don't get me wrong.
It is. But I think also, like, I was just so young too, and I was just like taking everything in that I didn't even, not that I didn't care about other people as much, but I was like just enjoying the whole experience. And I thought everyone there was like cool and maybe didn't know who everyone was at the time too, you know.
Where can people find you? Are you on social media much? Do you do much?
Mostly Instagram. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it's just my name with an extra A in the middle. So Anita, A-N-I-T-A. A, and then last name Alvarez, A-L-V-A-R-E-Z, is my Instagram. And yeah, that's pretty much all I'm on these days. I'm trying to, I don't love the social media world, but I think it is a good platform for us as athletes to have. And especially in trying to share our sport, that's still not huge out there in the U.S. and more unique.
Thank you, Anita. We'll continue to follow her journey. That'll do it for this week's episode of Quest for Gold. We'll be back next week when we'll be talking weightlifting. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you then.